Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Hello, Quakers, and welcome to another episode of the QuakeCast. We have a very, very interesting and special episode today. We're actually talking to the vice president of 3D Realms, Fred Schreiber.
Fred is one of these people that you're going to hear in this interview that kind of started off in the games industry as a fan, as a young man. And then this evolution of his involvement with 3D Realms is really going to blow your mind. Fred is part of the team of people who are reinventing 3D Realms and who are taking the company in a completely new direction. But at the same time, they're embracing what made the company great in the first place. So without further ado, here's Fred.
I started gaming when I was 5 years old, when I got my first Nintendo, my NES. And at that time, it was Double Dragon, Super Mario Brothers, Buck Your Hair, Contra, ton of classic games on my NES that kind of got me into it. And when I turned 7, I got my first PC, Windows 95. It was fantastic. And alongside that, I also got Duke Nukem 3D. That was my first PC game, but my first big game. Most of the games I had for my PC originally was just shareware floppy disks from Apogee and 3D Realms. You could get 10 packs with 10 floppies, and they were all shareware versions of all these Apogee games. So that was my introduction to gaming. That's also where I played Doom the first time on a shareware floppy. But Duke 3D was the first real boxed game I got. And when I played that, it instantly hit me how freaking amazing first-person shooters were. Doom was fantastic, but it still felt very limited in terms of what you could do. But when I played Duke 3D for the first time, I accidentally pressed U on the keyboard to activate mouse look. It just struck me that, wow, now I have complete freedom to do pretty much whatever. This is fantastic. And then I read in a PC gaming magazine that Quake would come out also that year. And Quake was the first game I bought with my own hard-earned money. After playing Duke 3D, I wanted the sequel to Doom. I remember reading in Danish gaming magazines that Doom 2, the real Doom 2 called Quake, is coming out soon. So that was the first physical game I bought myself with my own money. And that just completely blew me away because it's so different from Duke 3D. And I was mapping for Duke 3D as well because it came with level editor. Quake didn't come with a level editor. And this was also true 3D, room over room, BSP. You can pretty much almost do whatever you want. There were still limitations to Duke 3D and the build engine that you had to kind of get around. So that really intrigued me. And I would almost say that experience of seeing how much stuff evolved from Duke 3D to Quake, even though it was the same year, really convinced me that I need to be in the games industry somehow. And I was still at this point, 10 years old, 9 years old, something like that. Mm-hmm. So that was my introduction to games and, of course, Quake.
That's pretty interesting considering where you are now. You kind of got started with these games and now you're sort of overlooking them, which is really cool.
That's pretty crazy because I would call myself a hardcore 3D Realms fan as a kid, an Apogee fan. I would, like, for instance, when we got internet in my small city, our first 14 4K modem, the first website I went to was 3drealms.com. And this must have been in 97. And that was also around the time when they actually got their forums up running. In most of the 90s, 3D Realms were not on traditional browsers. They were on the BBS network, which is how they distributed their shareware versions of their games and also sometimes the full versions. But they got on the what we now call the internet in the mid-90s. In 97, I joined their forum. And one really embarrassing thing I noticed when we took over 3D Realms was I found my old user profile. I was like this 14-year-old kid trying to write in English on Fiddler's Forum asking for, I remember I had some problem with a map I was making. I was asking the Duke 3D forums, like or 3D Realms forums, how to do certain things in the build editor. Super embarrassing, but it was a ton of fun looking into all these old forum posts. And actually, I one really fond memory I have was when I think it was my 15th birthday on the on the boards, the classic 3D Realms board, the forum. They always had this this list in the bottom where you could see everyone who was online, and whenever it was someone's birthday, it would have a little flag next to them or something like that.
Okay.
So on my 15th birthday, I got a package from Dallas, and I remember my mom. This is in Denmark, halfway you know across the world. I remember my mom.
Yeah.
Coming up to my room with this package from Dallas and Texas. And she was like, Fred, what have you done? Someone sent you a package from there. This was Joe Siegler, the community manager from 3D Realms, who sent me a DVD copy of the Duke Nukem Forever 2001 trailer. And he did it because he had noticed that I had created a thread on the 3D Realms forums where I saw some photos of E3 2001 in a gaming magazine, and in the background of one of those photos, I saw someone stand with a Duke Forever DVD in his hand, and I didn't know what they were. And this whole thread spawned out of that on the 3D Realms forums, where people were discussing, "Wow, is the game real? Did they bring it to the show?" And ultimately, Joe Siegler went into this thread and said, "No, this were just the trailer that we handed out to you know publishers and distributors and so on." And then he actually sent me one of those for my birthday. And at that point, I was sold. Like, I was already a huge 3D Realms fan, but wow. Like, that a company
so
would
cool.
send something to a 15-year-old kid in Denmark because they noticed that he had created a thread on their forum. That was just magical to me.
Well, yeah. It seems like you really learned a lot from that and it really got ingrained in you because you're very active in the communities that you're kind of involved with, obviously. On your own Discord and things like that, but on Twitter and all that, it feels like that's just a natural extension of who you were at that, you know, that young age of 15. And now you've kept that. And that, I think that's, you know, when you're dealing with games like this, you have to do it. So you're kind of almost your own community manager, right? I mean, that's probably a big part of your day.
Well, right now it is. Absolutely. You know, we just announced another game, and whenever we do that, I like to be hands-on with just the main messaging. What I've experienced with, I've been working now approximately 10 years with games. We started 10 years ago doing our first game, which was Duke Nukem Reloaded, a reboot or remake of Duke 3D in the Unreal Engine. And from when I started that project until now, I've experienced that a lot of people seem to attach these projects to me, and of course back then it was Interceptor, then it became 3D Realms, and now it's 3D Realms on Slipgate. And I really like to put in everything into the games, both in terms of community management, design, and direction. I have my hand involved in almost everything. I think it's kind of the Robert Rodriguez syndrome, where you know, he wants to direct, but he also wants to write a little bit, and he wants to do a little bit of music and sound, because otherwise he doesn't feel like he's in complete control of how the final product ends up. And then if something with the final product is not as he expected it should be, he can only blame himself rather than blaming someone else, because he was involved with all the aspects of the game. And we did do games that did incredibly well. We did do games that didn't do well, and I 100% blame myself for both our successes and our failures. But yeah, it's been a long journey, and I like the community stuff, but I would honestly rather have someone else take care of that. The reason I'm so involved right now with the announcement of Wrath is simply due to the fact that Joe Siegler, our community manager, is from the old school community management crew. You know, he has been working at the since I think he was hired in 1991 or 1991, I think he was hired at the company right around when Cosmo was announced. But he's been with the company for almost 30 years. And wow. Back then, community management was not Twitter, Facebook, social media. Community management was look over the forums and make sure that you moderate posts and you interact with the community and so on. Now it's that times 10 because you have Twitter and Facebook and Reddit and Discord. Like, it's just insane. So I try to do that because I know he can't. He takes care of some of the Facebook stuff, but then I kind of take care of the rest. But it's not my favorite part. just right when there's a big news story happening, like an announcement of a game or a new feature, I have to be on Twitter almost all day. And then within a few days, it kind of phases out. You know, the interest drops, people stop talking as much about it. And then I can also get back to regular work again.
Go ahead, RC, sorry.
I was just going to say, which is interesting because we're only 3 days out from the official reveal of Wrath. So you must be still in the thick of it right now.
Oh, absolutely. This has been quite an amazing journey. I'd like to think that we started this journey pretty much 10 years ago with Duke Reloaded. That was my entry into professional game development. Where I'm from, it's not a viable career path to make games. You back then, you did have a few studios from Denmark. You had IO Interactive, for instance, which did the Hitman games. They were, you know, a big AAA company with several hundred employees. And to think that I could work in a company like that, or anyone could work in a company like that, was just not realistic. You couldn't even take an education in game development or game design or anything. So it wasn't even an option.
Right.
So I was actually studying what's called design leadership and management. And it's pretty broad education. It's basically managing teams and the design process within any creative medium. It has to be as vague as possible. But with Duke Nukem Reloaded, I quickly realized that if you create something at home, even if it's just a mod, which this was for Unreal Engine 3, UDK, the development kit, has just been released for everyone to use for free. If you create something online that people actually like, it might be a career path for you in the future. And it doesn't matter where you live in the world. And when I realized that, I suddenly saw an opening to maybe it's possible to actually create a studio and live off of this. And I think the way I started 10 years ago is almost what Jeremiah is experiencing now, working on something by himself, not thinking that it's actually possible to create a game studio, but he's so passionate about this one project. For him, it's Wrath. For me, it was Duke Nukem 3D Reloaded, that eventually someday you are lucky to meet the right person who actually invests money in this thing and helps you develop it. And for me, Duke Nukem 3D Reloaded unfortunately didn't happen. The project was shut down. But when that was shut down, we were offered to take this team and this product we've made and basically create a new game, which would be a reboot of Rise of the Triad, a game we were huge fans of as well. And with that project also came an investment. And that was the official start of, back then, Intercept Entertainment, who later acquired 3D Realms. And then, you know, 10 years later, here we are. We've done 4 or 5 games since then, including Iron Maiden, which we did alongside a group of Built Engine enthusiasts. And here we are with Wrath, which is Jeremiah's vision. But Wrath is actually the first internal 3D Realms production in almost a decade, if not longer.
That's awesome.
Really interesting note about this game.
Yeah, and I was surprised to read there was a team of 25 folks, and I'm sure it's distributed mostly, but that's a much larger team than I kind of envisioned when I kind of read about how this was going down. So how many are in-house folks from Slipgate, let's put it this way, is Slipgate involved with that, or is it 3D Realms? I mean, or is it all distributed? How did that work out?
So Slipgate is the parent company of... of 3D Realms, alongside my partner Mike's parent company as well. So we share ownership of 3D Realms. So in that way, the people who are hired under Slipgate are also hired under 3D Realms, which means that it's both made by Slipgate and 3D Realms. It's all one thing. But the actual team working on this was put together after we found Jeremiah. There are a few people on the team who are resident Slipgate Studios developers, but there's only a certain amount of people you can put on a project like this with experience with larger games. We've primarily done what we call double A, like indie triple A type games. But the skill set required for a game like Wrath is vastly different. You can use certain programmers, you can use certain concept artists and animators and sound designers. We have Andrew, of course, doing the music. We have Bjorn, who was recently the senior audio designer on Cyberpunk 2077. But besides that, you need people who know the Quake engine, Quake C, BSP mapping, and of course, Quake scene mappers and modders more than you need anyone else, because those people have been working with this engine and this tech for, you know, a decade or two since the original game came out. Just like when we did Iron Maiden, we could do a very few things. We could direct and design the game, but place it in an IP and universe franchise that we developed. But the actual game itself had to be developed by someone who was well versed in the build engine. Because if you're a fresh team who never actually did a real game in the build engine, and you had to go from doing an Unreal Engine 4 title for PS4 and Xbox One to doing a game in the build engine,
right?
It's pure suicide.
Yeah, it is such an interesting kind of development, because it's this concept of taking older technology, and I know the retro moniker is something that you are steering away, and I get that, because to me it just feels it's more rather than retro, I'd call it authentic, like authentic gameplay, authentic art direction and all that stuff. But let me ask you, let's backtrack a little bit to 3D Realms and this new kind of iteration of 3D Realms. It seems like you're really interested in creating new IP, which is, to me, I love it, because I love new IP. I get kind of tired of sequelitis. And so let me just ask you, is that the driving principle of this new iteration, or is it just, is it something that's kind of an experiment and you're kind of saying, how's this going to work?
I don't think new IP specifically is the only path for us. So when we took over 3D Realms in 2014, and there's a short story connected to that. When 3D Realms laid off their employees in 2009, simply because of them running out of money, and Duke Forever was sold to Gearbox, I was among one of those fans who were eagerly awaiting for this game, and I was heartbroken to see this fantastic team that we all grew up with getting laid off. And that was, in my eyes, I thought that would be the death of 3D Realms. What I didn't know was that 3D Realms still existed, but it would just be Scott and George Broussard as the owners, but they wouldn't do anything active. Scott went into other ventures like Radar Group and tried to get Prey 2 off the ground with external studios and so on, but that's another story. But I created this Facebook group where I wanted to try and see if there was a way we could bring back 3D Realms or help them or anything, as naive as I was. But that was just not possible. And then I started working on my own remake of Duke 3D, and that's how that ended up with me establishing my own studio. But fast forward, when we had the opportunity to finally do something about this company I loved so much and grew up with, We finally did it. We had, at this point in 2014, we had just released Rise of the Triad. It had done incredibly well. We were now working on a new official Duke Nukem game under a license from 3D Realms. And unfortunately, 3D Realms got sued for giving us that license, which they had all the right to do that. But unfortunately, if you get sued by American law, you are you just have to go through the entire lawsuit until you reach either mediation or you go to court, and then you find out who's right and wrong. It's not like you sit down together and say, hey, have you seen this contract? This is okay. No, you have to go through the whole thing. So whoever has the most money and can survive the longest is automatically right. But that's okay. That's how that works. But during this, we knew that Treaty Realms could simply not defend themselves. They didn't have the capital to do that. So we saw that this as a chance and as an opportunity to, you know, let's offer Treaty Realms to acquire them, because then we can fight this together. And we did that. And I think a year later, we ended in mediation and we ended up, of course, settling with Gearbox. And today we're pretty good friends with Gearbox. We just did Red Rogers with Duke Nukem alongside Gearbox and so on. So that's all in the past. But during that, we took over 3D Realms. And when we did that, 3D Realms was just Joe, who still did a little bit of freelance stuff for Scott Miller. And then Brian Turner, who took care of the old storage room. Basically, the entire company was packed down and put in the storage container. And he took care of that, making sure if anyone sent them an email to their PO box, he would also pick that up and so on. So it was the same company still, but as bare bone as you can possibly imagine. So our strategy, what I really wanted to do with 3D Realms was at that point, first of all, there are more than 35 games released under 3D Realms and previously under the Apogee label that no one really has access to today. You can get some of them. I think it was like 8 or 10 of them on GOG. There were almost none of them on Steam. Devolver had done Duke 3D Megaton Edition on Steam, which was great. But otherwise, all like this legacy of games that so many people grew up playing, no one had access to that. So the first step here was, let's create a pack with every single game from 3D Realms, even including Wolfenstein 3D and so on, Duke Nukem Shadow Warrior, in an anthology pack that you can instantly play on Steam and Mac, PC, and release that. Alongside that, let's do a slight rebrand. Let's make a new logo, a new design direction, and get it out there that, okay, now 3D Realms is back. Now we have resources, and here's our back catalog of games just to refresh people's memory. You know, this is what we did back in the 90s. And after that, the new direction quickly became, okay, what is the essence of what made 3D Realms great? And I was starting to work with this plan of trying to go back to the core values of the games that 3D Realms did back in the 90s, the games that people remember 3D Realms most for. Like if you played Duke Nukem 3D, Shadow Warrior, and a game like Prey and Max Payne, if you didn't know they were made by the same company, you could have made a good guess that they were probably all from, you know, the same type of companies. The same when you play Devolver Digital games, even if you don't see that branding on there and they're all vastly different, you kind of have an idea that, wow, this seems like it will be a Devolver game.
Right.
3D Realms kind of had the same thing. All of the games were almost primarily action, first-person shooters. They always had a great protagonist. They always had some kind of tongue-in-cheek ness over the characters, or they would be very gritty, they would be very bloody, there would be a ton of action and so on. They had a certain core values that they would put into every single game. But unfortunately, when we started developing this strategy, I had to take over another project and save that from its destiny, which was Red Rogers. Red Rogers was in development before we announced the game, before we went to Kickstarter with it under a different team. And I had to take over that project and get it back on track, doing a Kickstarter for it and finish that project. So during this whole period, I was not able to fulfill this plan of 3D Realms. So we were forced to, or necessary for us to hire someone else to do that. And that plan changed while I was on board of Red Rogers trying to get that project through the finishing line. And during that time, 3D Realms had changed focus into doing a ton of smaller indie games, basically get as many games out there as possible under 3D Realms to make sure people notice the name again. That's where we did a game like Graveball that we published for a developer. Another one was Sick. not a strategy I necessarily agreed on, but I was just way too over my head with trying to save this other project. Red Brothers came out in 2017, and at this point, I got back into working at 3D Realms. We laid off the other guy, and the plan I originally wanted to execute was finally possible. So this plan was, let's develop new IP, not necessarily, but this is what we could do. We didn't really have any IP left at 3D Realms that were worth doing much with. We didn't own Shadow Warrior, Duke Nukem, or anything like that anymore. If we did, we'd probably have done something with that. But let's do some new IP, as we did back in the day, and let's go back to the basics. The first thing was, let's imagine that Duke 3D never happened. Let's imagine that Prey never happened, Max Payne, all these games, and restart our timeline. What if we just got the build engine technology right now and we could do a new first-person shooter with it, with the 20-plus years extra knowledge in game design that we've had since the mid-90s? And that turned out to be Iron Maiden. We found this great team who had done a number of great mods as well for Duke 3D. We hired them to do this fantastic game, and it's turned out really great. And the next step after that was, all right, if we're going to up ourselves after Iron Maiden, let's try and do a Quake engine game. The first 3D engine, effectively known as a 3D engine used for action games. And for that, the strategy was kind of the same. But when we found Jeremiah for this IP, we had something else in mind. But what he was doing was so close to what we wanted to do internally and produce ourselves that we reached out to him and asked him, you know, what is this about? Can you tell us more about it? We had a number of great meetings about it. And then we ended up teaming up together. And when I saw his stuff, I thought, wow, you must have a great team working on this, which it was, but it was just him and his friend doing the programming. There was nothing else there. And then I asked, how long have you been working on this? And I think it was like 5 or 6 years or something like that. So I could definitely see, okay, this is where we can help. Let's have us make your game, and you can direct it, and you can be the visionary, and we can put in all the money we need to make your game and your vision the absolute best it can possibly be. We'll get all the best people from the Quake scene, developers from all around the world, to put the absolute best into making sure that Wrath becomes what it could be if you had all the resources you wanted.
That's amazing. And I kind of chuckled there when you were talking about Jeremiah, because, you know, I'm sure you found him on Funk or that's my assumption.
Yeah.
And you probably saw the same stuff that we had been seeing, just little tiny mm-hmm. sneaks and snacks and we're going to talk to Jeremiah later today, but that's awesome. That's a great philosophy, because you get all the passion you get. I mean, obviously you had a passion for 3D Realms and Duke. And the Ion team, you know, they have a passion for build engine and the expertise, but you can have these talented programmers, but if they don't have the passion and the designers, it's going to show in the game. And so just this little bit that we've seen this week, you know, maybe what, 15 minutes worth of stuff, it brings a smile to my face, because I know how hard Jeremiah worked on it. And you know, it's like, oh my God, this is so satisfying as a fan of Jeremiah.
He's the hardest working guy I've ever met. First of all, whenever you meet someone who doesn't have a professional history in games or a professional history in general with anything, you instantly assume that you need to do a lot of hand holding and a lot of mentoring to make sure that this guy fulfills his potential. When I met Jeremiah and I had the first meeting with him, I was under a strong impression that this guy has definitely been working in the games industry before, because he knew a ton of stuff. Besides just working with Quake and so on, for me, what was more important was to make sure that he had a general understanding of gameplay design. And it seemed to me that he did. And what's required to have that general understanding is you just have to play a ton of games. He hasn't played a ton of different games, but he has played a ton of a certain amount, a certain type of games, which is obviously Duke Nukem, Quake, Blood, Hexen, and so on. He played these games so much and analyzed them so deeply that he knows exactly what makes those games tick. And I was really impressed when I started working with him, because he works around the clock. You know, sometimes I have to ask him, "Hey, go to sleep, man." Sometimes he asks me, and feels like we have a really, really good partnership going, because we both care so much. He cares so much because this is his vision. He always wanted to make this game. I care so much because we always wanted to make this game. It's just pure coincidence that he was actually already working on that thing, you know, and instead of trying to make two things that you know, collide and compete, why not join forces and make the ultimate thing? That was kind of what we wanted to do. So both teams, both like him and Nawel, who they are basically Kill Pixel, like the original two guys who did the version of Wrath that we saw on Funk, just as you guys did, combined with our team and all the new people we've hired, are all equally passionate about that one thing that Jeremiah is passionate about, which is why which is why I think we can put something fantastic together with Wrath.
RC, you wanna jump in?
Yeah, I'm just I'm kind of enthralled by the whole thing, because I think it's so cool that you're able to find somebody who not only is passionate but had this idea from the start that they were working on. I was definitely floored when I saw the stuff that he was creating back then, because I believe he actually sent me a very limited demo like years ago of this game, but this was before it was ever Wrath or ever you guys were ever involved or anything like that. And I think it was literally like two rooms, but just by those two rooms, I could tell how much work he was putting into what he was doing. And I was like, oh my God, I told him, dude, I will buy this game as soon as it's ready. Yeah. It seems awesome. The art style was really cool, because it definitely reminds me of where it is right now as well. But yeah, I think that's so cool that you guys are working together to bring this out.
Yeah, you can definitely see still the core vision from back then. I remember I saw some of his first stuff. When it was still sprites, everything was just 2D sprites, where I was not completely convinced. I think the video that really convinced me that this has potential was he uploaded these unlisted YouTube videos of the Retcher, which is this, you know, gun shooting these green blobs. And when I saw that, you know, okay, here's the texture work is on point. The geometry and level looks on point. It's just a little room, but it looks great. Lighting us is on point. The animations and the way this weapon works and looks is all on point. If you showed this video to someone and told them, "Oh, this is from you know, a big studio. They're making a new retro style shooter," everyone would believe them. And that's kind of the indicator for me whenever you have to get someone from the outside into your organization to work on something together with you, that one you're bringing out in from the outside, if whatever he's done already can be mistaken as a real product that's already out, a real professional product, just by looking at it, you already know you have something there. Because if we look at this and say, "Wow, this looks amazing. It looks like it's something, you know, that's right out of the 90s. It actually looks authentic. There's pure art. It looks handcrafted and so on." Someone else will also think that this looks and feels great. So that was the indication for me that this thing looks like it could be a commercial product. And I'm sure that we can nudge him in the right direction and give him all the help and resources. Because tackling something like this as a one-man team, if you wanted to reach the fidelity that he was going for, which is not high fidelity, but it's still, you know, within Quake, if you have to make a great looking monster in Quake, and yes, it still has to have a relatively low try count, the textures are still like, let's say 128, you have to be a fantastic artist to utilize utilize each and every single pixel to make it look great. So it still takes a very long time to handcraft each of these models and textures and so on. And if you have to do all of that and all of the levels and all of the programming, all of the animations, and actually finish a product, it will take years upon years. That is why he had spent, I think he said 5 or 6 years already on this. It's also one of the reasons that one of the probably best retro style shooters out there right now, Dusk, it's also made by one man. He got some help. He has Andrew doing the music, for instance, and so on. But that's David's project, and you can clearly see on that he decided to put as much effort as possible into making sure that Dusk is as fun as possible and the levels are as fun as possible to play through, that it feels fantastic to play. And then everything else kind of has to put on the back burner a bit, because if he had to put as much time and effort into every single aspect, let's say every single texture and enemy model and so on, he would also never be able to finish that game. So he picked a clear path and said, okay, if I'm ever going to finish this, I have to decide what this game has to be. And for Wrath, we, instead of deciding that we want this game to be this one thing, we wanted to get a large team on board. That's why we're right now roughly 25 people. So we can make sure that every single part of production lives up to what we're inspired by. It also allows us to actually deliver the game within a reasonable time frame. Again, if Jeremiah had to do this alone or with a group of, you know, 3, 4, 5 people, it would have taken years.
Oh yeah, certainly. And on that note, talking about the team, I was really curious because the team that you guys have lined up, it literally says in the trailer for the game, you know, it's made by Quake vets, and it's true because all the names that I see in the Discord at 3D Realms, these are all people that we know and people who have made maps over the years in Quake that I've been playing on my own channel for years. So how did you guys actually go about finding these guys and figuring out who you wanted to have on the team?
Sure. So we had our own team already in place, and some of them had to learn, you know, how to use something like Radiant, for instance, which is ancient by today's standards and very frustrating if you're used to working with any kind of modern engine. But it's a fun experience, nevertheless. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I asked Jeremiah, if you could put together a dream team. This wasn't in terms of models and animators and sound designers, but level design, because in a game like this, level design is key. If you could put together a dream team of level designers from the community that you'd like to work on this, what would that dream team look like? And he sent me a list and listed people based on priority. And then I started reaching out to all these people and pitching them the idea of working on this game. And we got a pretty good amount of those people on board. At some point, we also had to stop because we can't have, we need to make sure that there's at least a level for everyone to work on. And we have 15 levels in the game. So at some point, we have to stop and make sure that, okay, we can actually finish the game with this amount of people and also do a crazy amount of polish on it. So at some point we had to stop. There were some people like Simon OC, for instance, that we couldn't get on board for natural reasons. He's working in a larger AAA studio right now. But otherwise, I would say a large majority of the people that he wanted on board, we managed to get on board. And I think it's due to the fact that many of these people are working on fantastic Quake maps in their spare time. And if you get the opportunity to work on Quake maps, but not for Quake, but for a commercial title at 3D Realms, who would say no? You're already doing it in your spare time, and now you actually get to work with something people have never seen before, and you can go completely crazy and creative and do something brand new, but using all of the tools and experience that you've built up over so many years.
That touches on something I wanted to bring up, because we're in this weird, you know, coming from really deep inside the Quake community, or at least for the last few years anyway, I'm seeing this, it's like a dream come true for some of these people. And by the way, a dream that they gave up on, you know, and I'm not talking about anyone specific, but I'm just talking about a general vibe. And, you know, 'cause a lot of people like, if I could get, you know, make a living making Quake levels, I would. Right. And so, but that ship sailed long ago, and it's really, this is so amazing that this one project, and it might be a one-off, this might be the only time, I hope not, but I think it's really amazing that you could reach out into a community, pull them up and kind of make their wishes and their dreams come true. And I'm sure things are different. You know, the realities of it are a lot different than what people are expecting. But, you know, when Skaki said on Twitter, you know, this is what I've been working on, when you guys tease the image, you know, what he's been working on. He says it's some of the best work I've ever done. And you could just tell he was so excited. And if it's someone like Skaki saying this is the best work he's ever done, it's like, start Skaki's paying attention, fantastic. You know?
Yeah, that's saying a lot.
Romain Skaki was, he was actually here in Denmark at our studio working with us like two weeks ago for 2 weeks together with Jeremiah as well. And just sitting in the office with him every single day and just see how much effort he puts into these maps. It's just fantastic. Mm-hmm. He's such a great guy. And what makes especially Skaki great is that, and this goes throughout the entire games industry, if you really want to evolve your skills and be greatly appreciated as a team member, your ability to listen to feedback, even if you disagree with the feedback, but your ability to listen to it and digest it and try to figure out why does he give me that feedback? Because I disagree, but he must be coming from a different place. Let me try and figure out why. And then ultimately coming to the conclusion that, okay, this thing could actually be better if I did this, and then come to an agreed to conclusion that, okay, maybe this needs to change. Maybe not the way you say, but maybe, and also maybe not the way I think, but somewhere in between. Having that ability to go through that whole process in your brain without shutting down new ideas and feedback, that's ultimately what makes great designers. I remember we worked with a previous art director. He had a fantastic resume working on several huge AAA titles as an art director and lead character artist. And usually you would give this guy, you know, the task of making a character. He did, for instance, the original Bombshell character for when we did Bombshell. And you would think that, all right, let's just give him this character. And he knows way better than anyone. But the thing is, whenever he was developing this character, I would still look over his shoulder and tell him, you know what? This is not exactly how I imagine her. Maybe if you change the eye a little bit like that and the cheek a little bit like that and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. And he would just suck all of this info to him because he knew that he was learning every time. Because even though I don't know how to make a character model, just as I don't know how to make a level in Quake, not anymore at least, it's been a decade. he has all the tools, but when you're sitting with something every single day, all the time, like making levels or making characters, you quickly forget that outside perspective, fresh outside perspective, can be extremely valuable. Being able to take that in and apply it in your level and filter out the bullshit as well, because you shouldn't take anything in, is a really good skill. And Skaki really is a really good example of someone with that skill. He's a fantastic designer. About the rest of the guys on board, putting a team together like this is rarely done today, but that was how id Software, Ritual, Raven, all these classic like Rogue Entertainment, they were all established this way. Almost the entire team at Ritual back in 95 after 96 after they did the Scourge of Armageddon pack for Quake were all from the Doom community. They were all just mappers, like putting up maps on BBS for Doom. It's also how, like, Level Lord, for instance, got hired. He was just a modder, a mapper, who did his own stuff. So
yeah, and Matthias Wirtz and you know, Tim Willits. I mean, it just but you know, it's great.
That's how they used to hire people back then, because there were no one else. Like, the industry was so new and fresh. Nowadays, there are a ton of designers out there, but now it's kind of the opposite. You know, if we did put a team of AAA level designers on board of this, they would all pull their hair out. Like, they wouldn't be able to make anything substantial out of Radiant. You know, it would just be torrid.
Right.
Trench Broom is a lot of fun, but still, it would be torture because they wouldn't know where to start. It is a very niche market. And to say that a game like Wrath enables a lot of people who are mapping for fun to make a living out of it, I would say that that's an exaggeration, because no, you probably today can't make a living out of making Quake maps. But every now and then there will be this very niche product, a small idea that sparked for us and for Jeremiah at the same time to make a game like this that we don't know if anyone will buy it or if anyone will care, but we'll put all of the love and effort into it that we can and money and to try and make this thing. And then hopefully someone will like it and hopefully someone will care, someone like us. Hopefully there's enough hardcore retro old school shooter fans like us who would actually like something like this. And then you can suddenly give these people, all these mappers, hobby mappers who most of them have other jobs on the side, you can give them some kind of additional value other than just doing maps as a hobby. You can actually, you know, give them something more out of it. And the great thing about something like Wrath is that if this product is successful and if people actually do like it and if they can feel all the passion that's been put into this and how everything has been handcrafted by people who are so passionate and care so much about it, and they actually buy it and it does well, it will allow us to do the next thing. It will show us and prove to us that, wow, people actually do like this. They actually do love a game like this with this aesthetic and made in the old-fashioned way. It's like an old fine wine. Like that's how I kept expressing it on the press tour. It's like an old fine wine. If people do that, there's a good argument to be made that now we can hire in more, or we can maybe bring some in full time, and we can really start expanding this into more games. Again, the market ultimately decides if, even if it's a good game, but no one really wants to buy it because, nah, it looks old and I rather want to play Apex or Fortnite. Mm-hmm. That's fine. The market has spoken, but we've still created something that we love and something that we feel is valuable to us. And that should be the core philosophy of every game. If you truly make games out of the passion for the medium, not for the money, you make games that you want to play yourself. And if someone else likes it, that's secondary. That is great. That's really what you feeds on. But you make it for yourself first and foremost because you simply can't stop.
Right.
And there's a lot to that, too. And I completely agree. I mean, the authenticity, you know, that a team has, you know, when they're building a game, you know, that the passion they put into it is definitely really important. And you could definitely tell with this game that that is the case. Everybody who's involved loves Quake, loves old school FPSs. And, you know, I think the trailer does a great job of showing that as well. It's just like, you know, this is a game for you. Everybody who is beckoning for another Quake type game, this is for you. So what I can say is it seems like a lot of people have been very, very positive about the game so far, though. Can you talk a little bit about people's reactions to the reveal?
So, yeah, a reveal like this is always very it's very nerve-wracking. We've done quite a few now, and almost every single reveal we've made has been of new IP. Rise of the Triad, Bombshell, Red Rogers, Iron Maiden, and now this, all new IP, somehow new IP. And with every single reveal, you get super nervous about how will people react to something like this from 3D Realms. Because it's new and people always expect, whenever you tease anything, they always expect, oh, they're going to bring Duke back. Like that's the first natural and whenever you're not doing that, you are going to disappoint some people because everyone wants to see the same thing. Everyone wants to see a new Duke Nukem game from 3D Realms. It's kind of stuck to us and we can't really get rid of it, but that's how it is. It's like Valve. Every time Valve announces something, people want it to be Half-Life 3. But it will never be. So people will always be slightly disappointed. That's kind of the same approach we have to whenever we reveal something. For Jeremiah especially, it's been very nerve-wracking because he's never tried this before. And you know, there's nothing worse than having put 6 years into an idea and a vision and gotten this far and then see it just being torn apart. But the reception of this game has been absolutely overwhelming. I can without a doubt say that we've never seen that many impressions, previews, just general views on videos, retweets, likes, and so on in such a short amount of time as we've seen with Wrath for any game that we've done, since social media even existed, which really shows to me that first, Iron Maiden, which was kind of the prototype of okay, can you make a game like this today? We're not talking about a retro shooter. Like, we're not talking about like games like Strafe and so on with a retro aesthetic or pixel art platform games and so on. We're talking about, can this work, making a game that is not only old school in its looks, but is truly old school, truly made in the same technology by people who never stopped working with this, who are so passionate that they just won't let it go. Can that become successful? And Iron Maiden was the test case for that. And that proved, it took some time, but it really proved that yes, it can. And people really do appreciate when you run the extra mile to do something that others would think is crazy. So when this was announced, it just blew us away how many impressions we got and how much people loved it. When you're sitting at IGN or Game Informer and GameSpot and you present this game, it's really hard to get a read of what people think, because you come in and you're not like the guy before you showed off, a Metro Exodus or the new Assassin's Creed, and then you come in and you, the only reason I believe that we managed to do these press tours where we get invited and to show off our next game for the larger publications are the fact that, okay, 3D Realms, I wonder what they're up to now. Because we used to do these huge games back in the 90s, and we're kind of legendary for some of the right reasons, but also a lot of the wrong reasons. We did, the longest development in history of any game and the biggest, flop of any game, Duke Nukem Forever. So obviously, a lot of the press is interested in what are we doing next. And so when we come in and have to show something like Wrath, it has to really impress. It can't just be, oh, here's, another Duke Forever, and, oh, okay, we've seen enough now, we're not going to invite them the next time. So you don't really get a read. You show them this thing, we play through the game, the way the demos worked with Jeremiah and I was that he would play the game, and then while he was doing certain things in the game, I would explain, okay, so this is the Ruination Blade and it has two fire modes and blah, blah, blah. And we would just play through the demo, explain it. Jeremiah would then go through the premise, what's the overall story, what's the vision, and then they would usually do an interview afterwards just to get all the details, how did you guys find each other and so on. But you never get a read, and that's the hardest thing, because when you leave such a press meeting and you've spent so much time and passion showing off your baby, and you leave without the sense of, do they really like this or not? And you just have to wait until the announcement. That's nerve-wracking. But luckily, almost all the press coverage we've gotten has been overwhelmingly positive. The only one that we went out of really happy, and this is typical Jeremiah, we had a press showing for Destructoid. And he played the game, the guy from Destructoid, CJ. And right after, his first reaction was, "This is fucking amazing. When can I talk about it?"
That's great.
It was great. But right after that, Jeremiah's reaction was, "So, do you think it went well?" It's like, "What do you think?"
Like, oh, that's awesome. Man.
I don't really know if it went well. I haven't tried this before. Well, he said it was fucking amazing and he can't wait to show it. So I would say it went pretty okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'd have to say so.
But his demeanor is always very, very calm and very sarcastic in some way. So it's pretty fun going on a tour like this with Jeremiah.
That's amazing. Well, RC, do you have anything else?
I have a unrelated question to everything. With how busy you are, Fred, I was just curious if you get the chance to play other games, and if you do, what have you been playing lately?
Yeah, so that's the biggest loss whenever you start working on games professionally is that you don't have time to play games. And I know a lot of people, almost kind of proud to say, "Oh, I don't have time to play games because I make games." It's almost an elitist kind of view, but to some degree, it's not really true. It's like working out. Anyone have the time. They just have to find, get up at 6 in the morning and do it if you want to, or stay up an hour later if you want to. But there is a lot to do with how you manage to pick out the games that you really want to play and which games you just want to watch, a quick let's play or a review, or like something from someone you really respect online. Like it could be Man Lives or Civi or someone who you know you share your opinion with. So when he makes a video on this game, you'll most likely understand what the game is about and you don't really have to play it. So for me, I tend to pick out a small amount of games that I really want to play. And then I put aside 1 hour every night or every second night and I sit down and then I dive into it. But again, so many amazing games come out all the time and I can't play them all. So recently, for instance, it took me 3 years to actually get started with Horizon Zero Dawn for the PS4.
Right.
Finally, I came to that. Okay, now it's time to actually play that thing that everyone loved, you know, back 2 or 3 years ago. So I just finished that together with my girlfriend. We kind of play these games like we binge watch a series or something like that, you know, watch an episode every night. Now we play an hour every night. We just started on Resident Evil 2. And again, I've never truly played a Resident Evil game. So I had to ask a lot around on our internal Discord, okay, which one should I pick now? Because I don't have time to play more than one over the next, you know, 3 or 4 months. And I know there's so many. There's Metro Exodus, and it's just too many amazing games. What should I pick? And it ended up being Resident Evil 2. So right now, I think we're, after a month and a half, we're 3 hours, 4 hours into the game.
It's just crawling. That's like my world.
It's incredible. And oh shit, Horizon took, I think we had 90 hours on that. It took so long to get through Horizon. And again, that's another curse as a developer. Whenever you play an open world game as a developer, you have this curse where you know how much effort every single grass leaf and stone that's been placed in this world, how much effort that was put into all of it. So you want to see all of it and you want to read every single piece of lore as if you were proofreading it for your developer friend. So it just takes so long. And I don't think I'm going to get into open world games for a long time because it can be a chore. Luckily, Horizon was not, some people say it's not a truly open world game. It's kind of linear still, but yeah, that was a good experience though. But yeah, it's kind of a curse sometimes.
Excellent. Yeah, I guess that is a one positive of not having as much time though, is that you just get to pick the one game that rises to the top, you know. And yeah, so
in 2016 it was Doom 2016. I played that one. I guess stayed 1 hour late every day after work to play 1 hour, and I put a timer on every time. And ring. I was, all right, I'm done now, and then I go home, and then because then I could. So I would plan it as, you know, okay, I need to work out now. I need to, you know, I need to go to a family dinner now. I would plan it like an event in my calendar. Okay, play Doom from, you know, 6 to 7 p.m.
I'm honestly in that same boat right now because, you know, even just trying out new mappers in the Quake scene, just trying to, you know, embrace my audience because I get emails and I get PMs all the time like, hey, I need help on my map. And then I feel like I really got to play this guy's map. I mean, he looked at my tutorials and everything. So scheduling things on your calendar is I hear you. I feel your pain.
Oh, absolutely, man. And even sometimes when we have, you know, an evening together, my girlfriend and I, and we come home and we talk about, all right, we have tonight together. What should we do? And then you make all these plans. Oh, we should go there and do this, or we should play this game and so on. And it almost always ends up falling asleep in the couch, both of us. And then you wake up at, you know, 11:30 p.m. and then you just go to bed and continue.
the best laid plans of gamers.
Yeah, exactly.
This is RC. Thanks for listening to the Quakecast. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/watchGGRC.
And I'm Dump Truck. You can find me on YouTube. Just search for Dump Truck _DS.